Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on AIRS LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Today's articles are from the March 2025 edition.
Making My Way in Savannah by Frances McDougall. This historic Georgia destination welcomes around 15 million tourists each year. Among them are visitors like me who have disabilities and unique travel challenges. Thankfully, the hostess city of the South lives up to its nickname. I've been visiting Savannah for more years than I'll admit, spending several hours there on the way to see family in South Carolina's Lowcountry. As a child, I loved going on the ghost tours and trolley rides, eating at Mrs. Wilkes' dining room, and exploring the parks. On a recent trip, I stayed a few days in Savannah to see it in a way I never could have as a child. I wanted to dig deeper into the city's harmonious contrast, quirky and stately historic houses, town squares that are as elegant as they are organized, and the Savannah College of Art and Design, SCAD, which educates future artists, architects, curators, and other creatives. For 20 years, I was an editor at a design magazine, and now I find myself drawn to cities that are committed to historic preservation and have plenty of antique stores, design shops, galleries, and museums. My husband, Thierry Guider, is an enthusiastic enabler, and we both love a thriving local food scene. Just as my tastes have changed since childhood, so have my travel habits. I have multiple sclerosis and thus have difficulty walking distances, which necessitates thorough preparation and more intense scrutiny of prospective destinations. I refuse to stop traveling. It is one of the joys of my world today. But there are certain accommodations that we apply to every journey. Savannah is compact, making it dense in options for seeing and doing. This worked in our favor because there was less ground to cover. But I knew from my experiences in other old cities, this one was founded in 1733, that I'd have to contend with uneven sidewalks, bumpy roads, and unpredictable obstacles. That said, it's easy to get distracted by the magic of this place. Thierry and I began our trip in Forsyth Park. This alluring 30-plus acre green space appears on every must-see list because it's great for strolling, taking in a concert, or resting in the shade under live oak trees and Spanish moss. We walked the paths until we ended up at Forsyth Park's Garden of Fragrance, designed for moments of escape and calm. This walled section is especially attractive for those with sensory challenges. It requires descending two steps to enter, but we met kind strangers who helped me navigate them. In the garden, there are benches ideal for contemplation amid the hum of pollinators and the caress of soft breezes. The pause seemed a serendipitous part to our adventure, a chance to appreciate the hidden treasures within Savannah. Neighborhood gyms. Our next stop took us down Victory Drive, a tree-lined road that borders one of Savannah's historic neighborhoods, with traditional and modern houses to the left and small parks on every other street. The area is a dream. We were on our way to Everhard Auctions, which was new to me but has been in business since the early 2000s. Amanda Everhard and her husband Chris moved to Savannah 20 years ago, after she'd spent more than a decade as an executive at Sotheby's, New York. Customers can make an appointment to browse the merchandise, including furniture, jewelry, silver, and obscure objects from around the globe, before placing their bids in the auctions, which are held exclusively online. Everhard's regular appearances on Antiques Roadshow on PBS underscore her street cred. There are so many treasures that come out of houses here and nearby, she says. Located in the Live Oak District, Everhard Auctions shares the block with the Stacks Bookstore, owned by author Cindy L. Otis. The shop is accessible via a ramp. She is also a wheelchair user, and the literary selections reflect the interest of her friends and area residents. Otis originally moved here to work remotely during the pandemic. My background is in tech and government, but I always wanted to have a neighborhood bookshop. I did a lot of research to find the right place, she says. Sure enough, people love the spot, and the reading and discussion groups that she hosts keep it busy. Down the street, Waters Cafe is a cute and colorful favorite with a frequently changing menu. We popped in for a grilled ham and cheese sandwich with iced tea and then sat outside, getting to know some of the regulars and admiring their puppies. Next, Theory and I took a quick trip to SCAD's gift shop, which offers objects created by the college's current and former students and staff. When we arrived, I was escorted to the permanent ramp that's on the side of the building. I wandered the gallery of paintings, sculptures, crafts, and jewelry, getting a shot of retail therapy. We went right across the street to the Griffin, a SCAD-run cafe, and enjoyed scones with Devonshire cream and jam. Their portable ramp made getting in mostly easy, and I could roll out after my midday indulgence. Old buildings, new energy. We got back in the car to make our check-in at Hotel Bardo, our home for the next 2 nights. Recently opened, it's elegantly discreet, yet already bustling with many Savannah residents as guests. Formerly, the mansion on Forsyth Park, the property was a new design and concept that project an attitude of unfussy hospitality that extends beyond the smile at the front desk. Our first floor accessible room was just as stylish as expected, with rattan accents, a Tuscan-inspired palette, plenty of space for maneuvering and relaxing, and large windows with views of the central courtyard, which is aptly named the Oasis. A verdigris steel gazebo frames settees and lounge chairs, making even the most weary tourist seem sophisticated. Theory and I enjoyed drinks there before our dinner reservation to recharge after a day of looking and learning. That night, we ate at Common Thread in the Starland District. An open-air lift got me up to the porch of the charming 1897 Grouskoft House. The founders, Brandon Carter and Ryan Williamson, preserved the structure's original bones, but made it feel modern with spareness and simplicity. Reflections of the menu's regional purity. When we asked for entree ordering advice, our server said the chicken, with its changing seasonal sauce, was a staff favorite. My instinct was to try something more exotic, but the dish, with its curried potatoes and roasted vegetables, was no exaggeration. The best I've ever had. History around every corner. The next day, we headed out for a guided trip around the city with architectural tours of Savannah. When I'd signed us up, I'd initially feared that it might be an esoteric snooze, but the city's history and design are so rich that I decided to take a chance. My interest had been piqued years before when we visited the Owen Thomas House and slave quarters for work. I couldn't explore the circa 1819 neoclassical building because it isn't wheelchair accessible. Undeterred, I hoped this tour would provide more insight into the house's design, composition, and history, particularly its unique construction with imported stone and local tabby made from lime, oyster shells, sand, and water. Guide Jonathan Stalkup, a SCAD alumnus and architect, led about a dozen of us through 6 of Savannah's 23 historic squares, pointing out key details that we no doubt would have missed otherwise. Stalkup had us analyze the alternating patterns used in brick construction, Flemish, running and English bonds, and other overlooked gems, such as a little 1840s house. The excursion took about 90 minutes, but the enlightenment that I gained on how the architecture has evolved, as well as how social, economic and stylish trends have impacted the hoodie has made me want to go back for a refresher course. Stalkup jokes that he learns a lot about the surveys that were completed afterwards. I often hear from parents that their children loved the tour, which is great, but kind of a surprise, and from architects saying that their partners enjoyed themselves. He notes, theory can be a little cynical about historic buildings in this country compared to the centuries-old architecture in France. But he was fascinated by Savannah's urban planning and construction. When the tour was over, we made a stop at the circa 1820 Davenport House Museum, which was saved in 1955 by seven Savannah women who went on to form the historic Savannah Foundation. The majority of the four-story house is not wheelchair accessible, but the ground floor basement holds the Urban Enslaved exhibition, which includes copies of ledger entries that help trace all those who lived and worked there. The story that scholars have put together is incomplete due to inconsistent record keeping, but the search to fill in the blanks is ongoing. A shopper's paradise. Afterward, we browsed One Fish, Two Fish, a shop on Whitaker Street that anchors what is considered Savannah's downtown design district. I was attracted by the store's commitment to accessibility, including its website, which can be adjusted for users with visual impairments, and the space itself, which is manageable in a wheelchair thanks to the wide aisles. Owner, Jennifer Grayson, stocks candles, books, tableware, and accessories. Across the way is her clothing satellite, the Annex. A short walk down the street is Custard Boutique, carrying fun and funky clothing and jewelry, and Madison and Fifth, specializing in high-end vintage apparel and accessories. For stylish home goods and art, head to the lighting store Visual Comfort and Company, and the design shop Asher Rye. Our whirlwind day ended at Bardo's Coastal Italian Restaurant, St. Biblana, named for the patron saint of hangovers, accessed once again by a lift. We took in a buzzy, natural light-filled dining room, a smart layout with strategically placed greenery, balanced, boisterous groups versus the more intimate tables. From our perch next to the wall of windows overlooking the gift shop and the gavel carport with bikes, loaned out to hotel guests, we could see Forsyth Park as the sun set. My meal of grilled artichokes, followed by tagliatelle with foraged mushrooms and watercress, was divine. Theories, panzanella salad, laid the groundwork for his chicken in a bone broth sauce. After resolving to cool it on the sumptuous dishes, I soon caved by ordering dessert. The chocolate sorbet was just too tempting, and I was not disappointed. Food for thought. The next morning, we jump-started our day at Norabia's Grits and Gravy on Habersham Street. The menu is so packed with Southern classics that it is best not to even think about eating light. Theory may be French, but he still appreciates a good Southern breakfast. We shared a plate of crab cakes and grits, though I still wonder if I should have tried the French toast. Apparently, it's so sweet it doesn't need syrup. Sita Narebi Reed, the owner's daughter and the namesake of the restaurant, greeted and gabbed with everyone who came by. Fully fueled, we went to the Telfer Academy, accessing the basement via the side entrance. The museum was originally a home for the prominent landowner and merchant, Alexander Telfer, his mother, and his three sisters. It was designed in 1819 by William Lay, the architect of Owen Thomas House, and offers an inspiring look at Jay's style, as well as the decorative and fine arts of the time. I was fascinated by the details, curtain tie-backs, trompe d'oeil wallpaper, and paintings with beautiful frames. The house has been added onto and altered to better display American and European art from the 19th and 20th centuries, much of which was collected by curators after it opened as a museum in 1886. The Jepson Center, designed by architect Moshe Safdie in 1998, is easy to get to and features dynamic galleries that often relate to Savannah itself. The exhibition that was up at the time of our visit showcased photographs by Frank Stewart, which capture celebratory and tragic moments in African-American culture. Stewart has traveled the world to communicate through his imagery, and this display felt like a personal tour through his life. The labels next to each piece included his own commentary that was both funny and insightful. The Jepson was a fitting last stop as we wandered the modern, airy spaces and appreciated this welcoming town. Savannah embraces the unique, so its efforts to accommodate everyone make sense. When visiting cities built before the concept of accessibility was even considered, there are steps that travelers with mobility issues and other concerns may have to take, but it's satisfying to experience the advances that are taking hold. Savannah's thoughtful development was ahead of its time, and there's every reason to believe it will continue its recent path. How to plan an accessible trip. A few pieces of advice to make travel easier and more enjoyable. Start at the visitor's bureau. Vacationing with wheelchairs or any other mobility aids requires research beyond where to stay and what to do. Begin planning by going to your destination's convention and visitors bureau. For this trip, I checked out visitsavannah.com. for travel options like trolleys and tours, and info on what to expect in terms of accessibility. The site has a list of public transportation choices that comply with Americans with Disabilities Act, but we relied on our car and my wheelchair to optimize time. Call ahead. Hotels, including historic ones, must follow the ADA accessibility standards, but they often omit specific details on their websites. Make a list of any questions and call to verify the degree of accessibility in your room. I've learned the hard way that narrow spaces, bathtubs rather than roll-in showers, and poorly placed mirrors, irons, and hair dryers can be frustrating. That said, hotels can't customize a room to suit all your needs. Take a breath, scout out potential challenges, and move things around if needed. When in doubt, ask. Likewise, if a restaurant, boutique, museum, or any other business does not have clear photographs of interiors or a section about accessibility on their website, it's best to request more information and explain your needs. Some places may have accommodations that require workarounds, such as portable ramps or alternative entrances. Scheduling ahead is also important to minimize disappointment if you can't easily get into a building. Mind the curbs. Although most sidewalks have sloping transitions to crosswalks, some are in need of maintenance. Look around for other corner curbs that are smoother to navigate. Care for caregivers. At my stage of disability, I need someone to help me with mobility devices and logistics. I mostly travel with family, but have also taken fun trips with friends who are willing to trade mountain hikes for garden strolls. Keep in mind the challenges that are faced by your caregiver. My husband is frequently more worn out than I am. Take your time. Getting around in an unfamiliar place takes patience, whether you're on foot, wheels, or tires, but you can choose to enjoy the journey and all that comes with it. Savannah's special power is the appeal of the unexpected. Explore the squares, look at the houses, stop at a cafe, and strike up a conversation. We have come to the end of our program. I'm Joyce Davis, and I will be back soon.